T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Right now, we get to talk about the things that Amin El-Hassan wants to talk about. And I certainly hope that he also wants to talk about the fact that he is now with Meadowlark Media, which is like one of the coolest named new companies on the block. Obviously, you, Dan Le Batard, that whole crew just did what, a free dumb 24-hour podcast? Did you get a nap in between then and your appearance here today, Amin?
Yes, I at the conclusion of the 24-hour event, you know, I was awake at 7 a.m. on Friday. The event started at noon. We got done Saturday at noon. I was awake that whole time. I actually went out to brunch afterwards. I knocked back a couple, got back to my hotel room at around 3:30. And from 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday until 7 a.m. on Sunday, I was asleep.
There you go. A nap in the middle of the day is not walking through that door. He's just going to sleep the entire day. Thank you very much.
A mere nap. Yes, a mere nap is not walking through that door.
That's a segue to the Nuggets, right?
Sure. Why not? Because they're about to go home.
And they've been sleeping their way through so far. The NBA, you know, sort of made its first stop in Milwaukee last night, and it was essentially a pie fight. And what I wanted to ask about is not so much whether Milwaukee can ugly up this series and extend it beyond what looks like 5 games, but whether Milwaukee understands what to do with Giannis Antetokounmpo, or whether Giannis understands what to do with Giannis Antetokounmpo, because it seemed like last night was a particularly egregious example of him basically believing he needs to end every possession with a shot no matter where he is on the floor. And I kind of wonder whether that's Mike Budenholzer's fault or that's Giannis's fault, because it's not a very efficient way to use one of the best players in basketball.
You know, if I said that mirrored my thoughts, I probably wouldn't be strong enough of an agreement. I compared it earlier today on the radio to the 2000 early 2000s Lakers. You say Shaq and Kobe, and you ask who was the best player on that team. I think we all would say Shaq was the best player on the team. But at the end of the game, when possessions are on the line, who had the ball in his hand? It was Kobe. Is it because Kobe was secretly better? No, I don't believe that. It's because Kobe was better equipped in those moments to have the ball in his hands. Now, sometimes the ball would find its way to Shaq. He got great post position, and, you know, he's got a mismatch, or, you know, pretty much anybody with a mismatch. He caught it right near in his sweet spot, in his power zone, and he did his thing. We never threw the ball to Shaq 23 feet away from the basket and said, "You're our best player, big fella. Now go win us the game." For some ungodly reason, Milwaukee, for 3 years now, this isn't a new thing, for 3 straight years, have been stuck with this belief somehow that because Giannis is our best player, that means we give him the ball, and then he's ipso facto, he's going to win us the game because he's great and he's MVP. This is true, but that doesn't mean that's necessarily his strength, and it's not playing to his strength. And given that this is now year 3 of this calamity of them doing this in the playoffs, I'm beginning to seriously question is it Giannis demanding tyrannically, I'm the best player, give me the ball or else? Or is it Mike Budenholzer with the least imaginative offense in the history of basketball? Either way, it cannot continue if Milwaukee has any designs on winning a championship or even getting out of this series.
I mean, El Hassan here on 95.7 The Game. At what point does the blame fall on Drew Holiday for not running an offense? I mean, there's no reason for Giannis to be initiating plays. He needs to be finishing them. The point guard's got to be the initiator. I thought Drew Holiday was supposed to solve this problem.
I thought so, too, and I thought he did for most of the regular season. And now we get to the playoffs, and we're seeing Giannis 23 feet from the basket with Blake Griffin guarding him approximately 7 feet from the basket. Blake Griffin's like, I don't care where you start from. You don't have to finish it somewhere around here because I don't trust or believe your abilities from out there. And this somehow still evades and eludes Milwaukee as a team. Yeah, we could put some of the blame on Drew Holiday. He didn't have a particularly good game last night, and maybe he should be calling for it. But to me, as a team, we've got to have conversations on what to do. I mean, you didn't talk about this at all. Hey, guys, what do we do if someone drops off Giannis 20 feet? That don't happen. That was a one-time thing. That's so yesterday. What are you talking about? No, of course. They're going to do this every single game, every single series. So how do they not have any sort of counter for that? I was watching that game last night, guys, and I'm saying, somebody, Bryn Forbes, just run at him, dribble handoff, and then tell Blake Griffin, okay, you're going to sit right back there? Cool. We're going to get a wide-open shot out here. The irony is at the other end of the floor, with about 90 seconds, Kevin Durant hit a three-pointer on the right wing, if you guys remember. He caught the ball. Bruce Brown sets a pick. He dribbles towards the center of the floor. P.J. Tucker gets picked off. He's behind Durant now. And Durant rises and fires clean look. And the reason why it's a clean look is because Brook Lopez, rather than come up and crowd that screen and blitz Durant on the other side of it, he sags back. Why is he sagging back, you might ask? Because this genius is worried about Bruce Brown, who's killed him all game long with those little floaters. So, basically, Brook Lopez is in the same drop coverage that Blake Griffin is in on the other end. The difference is Brooklyn understands when their bigs are dropping, we're getting a shooter come off that screen and firing. And Milwaukee, everyone's sitting around and watching Giannis rather than have a shooter run off him and get a clean look. And to me, that's not – I mean, yes, we can blame Giannis, and I guess, yes, I could blame Drew Holiday, and I could blame Bryn Forbes or Chris Middleton or any one of these other individuals. But to me, that is a major strategic flaw because this isn't the first time they've seen this defense, not this year, not last year, not the year before. And by the way, Brazil ran the same defense against Giannis in the World Cup.
There you go. I don't want us to get stuck on just one series. There's too much action happening in too many towns to just get stuck one place. Since the concept was don't know what to do with the ball in Milwaukee, let's go to Phoenix, where clearly there is nobody in the world of basketball who knows more of what exactly to do with the ball right now than Chris Paul. He has been such a difference maker, and as much respect as I got for what the Nuggets might be and might be still in the future with Jamal Murray, they just don't have a backcourt to match up with Paul and Book right now. This could be El Sweepo.
Yeah, and you know, I was on the radio, Salt Lake City radio, with Spencer Checkett, and he said something that I thought was interesting. He said, the Jazz, their number one, like, strength is they play hard every possession. And as soon as he said it, I said, that's the difference in the Nuggets-Sun series. Because the Nuggets are talented, even with Jamal Murray on the sideline, they got the MVP of the league, right? But they don't play hard every possession. They don't play ball to the wall every possession. And the Suns do. And that's what you're seeing through two games. They're just getting outworked and out-efforted out there. And they're playing too cool to school for school for some reason. I think that's really jeopardizing their abilities to stay competitive out there. And a lot of that credit, of course, goes to Chris Paul, who's brought that sense of urgency to the Suns this season.
Michael Malone basically called them out for that very thing after game two, saying they quit. Is that a coach's last sort of gambit to shame a team in the playoffs into playing harder? Or does he recognize that this is so much a part of Denver's DNA that it isn't going to matter? Because it sure seems like when you drop that on the public rather than just your own team, it almost seems like you're out of other motivational tools.
Yeah, I, in general, I would agree with you, Ray, but this is not the first time that Michael Malone has done this in his tenure in Denver. He does this routinely. He'll call out his team for effort. And then the other thing that he goes to his grab bag for a lot is the opposite, is to say the media, we don't respect his team. And even if you look at that MVP shirt that they put out for Jokic, it's all these things like too slow, overweight, a flopper, which I love. That's not incorrect. He is a flopper. But, you know, it's got all these things. Mike Malone likes to go to that well a lot. Like, we're disrespected, and we're going to show them that you guys don't have enough respect for us. And then the other side of that coin is, we were lazy, and we didn't play hard. For most people, I would say that's a well you can't go back to too often. But he does, and it seems to work for him.
Amin El-Hassan, you're talking about a well. We know Kawhi Leonard has a near bottomless level of well of basketball talent. He has been a force of nature that has altered the course of NBA history. That's how good he is. So why is he taking one shot in the last 7 minutes? Can you please try to explain the Los Angeles Clippers to me?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you talk about needing a point guard in that situation. Holy hell, I guess we know what's on Lawrence Frank's to-do list this summer. You just get somebody, anybody, because I guess Rondo doesn't have a pulse anymore. So can we get someone with a pulse who can run a team? That's part of it. The other part of it is, again, the Clippers are in the same boat as the Nuggets. They've got that too cool to school for school mentality. We'll get to it when we get to it. There were two possessions in the fourth quarter yesterday, and Jeff Van Gundy pointed it out. It's just lackadaisical. You can't play like that. First of all, Paul George, where do you get off to have the confidence to throw that behind the back pass? With the playoff reputation you have. The crowd is chanting playoff P to him. That's how far the mighty have fallen. The crowd is literally chanting his own nickname to him derisively, sarcastically, because everybody in the world knows the fraud. The fraud in terms of being a playoff performer. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you got Reggie Jackson, who was just kind of lazily dribbling the ball up and kind of just lost it up there. Yeah, it's not like this guy, this 7 foot dude with 7'9" wingspan, has just won his third Defensive Player of the Year award today or anything like that. What could possibly go wrong? And that's the infuriating thing about the Clippers, is that for as talented as they are, and they're really talented. And by the way, Serge Ibaka, done for the year. He's having back surgery. They just don't seem to have the sense of urgency. They didn't have it last year when they were up 3-1 and up double digits in Game 5 and blew that 3-1 lead. And in Game 7, Doc Rivers sitting there begging these guys to play harder. And they don't seem to have learned anything of a lesson this year. It took them 7 games to get through Dallas, and I'm going to take them a whole lot less to lose to Utah.
So what you're suggesting, if we encapsulate everything, is that the only losing team that's going to end up this round with its pants on is Atlanta.
I mean, I don't know if that's an accurate... I mean, they're going to try to keep their pants on. How about that?
Well, I mean, but when they lose, it won't be because they shame themselves.
Right, right. Yes, that's true. But when they lose, it'll be because they were overwhelmed. And that has some sort of shame as well. Because... Oh, Joel Embiid, and the last I checked, he's questionable for tonight. So that obviously weighs heavy on the balance of this series. But they don't have any answers. Beyond the players who might have answers who don't, they don't even have bodies. They don't have enough people who are large enough to guard him. You know, outside of, Capella and John Collins and some lesser names beyond that. So what's going to happen if Embiid plays, is they're just going to get overwhelmed and trucked over game after game. And I believe Trae Young is going to have a harder time as games go by because those Sixers have a lot of long defenders who are smart and experienced and can give him problems.
I just saw this stat on Trae Young. In 7 career playoff games, 202 points, 70 assists. He's the first player in NBA history with 200 points and 70 assists in his first seven career playoff games. And I just think, Amin, you know, he really represents that we are now watching a true passing of the torch in terms of the generation that was and the generation that is coming. And maybe it took LeBron getting off the stage to breathe oxygen, you know, into some new guys to watch in their careers. But what we've seen out of Trae Young and Devin Booker and Devin Mitchell, we just lost in the last round Luka, Jason Tatum, and Ja Morant. I mean, we say this almost every year, but I think we really mean it this year. The amount of young, under 24-year-old talent in this league right now is just absolutely ridiculous, and we're not even including Zion because he didn't go to the postseason, and he might be the most talented and youngest of them all, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, and you know, not only that, but most of them appear to be the type of guys with not only the character but also the personality to be faces of the league, to be people that marketers will determine you will welcome them into your home to sell you appliances, to sell you soft drink, to sell you banking services, whatever it is. They all are really well put together. If I'm Adam Silver, I feel really good about the future of the league. The one question is, it feels like for at least the last 35, 40 years, we are a league of either one or two faces, right? It's not really, we haven't had a whole lot of seven guys representing the NBA.
Right.
It's Jordan. It's Magic and Bird. It's Shaq. It's LeBron. It's Kobe. It's kind of like one or two guys at a time. And now we've got like a cast of guys, and I like them all, but I look at that and I say, which one of them has the opportunity and the potential to rise above it and say, no, I'm the guy, and everybody else is. Like the old movie goes, like, I'm David Ruffin, and these are the Temptations.
So who is that guy? If you could put next week's Meadowlark check and invest it in a future in an under 24-year-old NBA player, where would you put it? You have to put all of it, 100% behind one person. Who's the NBA young stock you buy?
Going against my better judgment about the xenophobic ways of American audiences and how they need someone who played AAU basketball in order to root for and believe in, I'm going Luka. I mean, he's got it all. He's got the I don't want to call it sassiness, but like he's enough of a jerk that makes you kind of I kind of love him, right? And I think that's kind of, if you're too much of a nice guy, I don't know if there's a place for that at the throne. The throne.
Right.
This
was Harrison Barnes's problem. He was built to be a killer, but he was way too nice to be a killer.
Way too nice to be a killer. And Luka is the opposite, right? He's not built to be a killer, but he's an absolute assassin. And so that combined with, I mean, we're taught, when you look at him, you're looking at a child genius. You're looking at someone who, as a teenager, was the MVP of the second toughest league in the world. And at every stage has been anointed, and at every stage has lived up to it. He's the closest thing to LeBron James we've seen since LeBron in terms of all the expectations. I'm here to shatter them all. And I'm going to rewrite all the record books. That to me, he's got everything going for him except for one thing. He's got a funny name, and he's from a funny sounding place. And will American audiences gravitate to a superstar who is not American?
Always a pleasure to talk basketball with you. We love it. Thank you very much. Best of luck to you and everyone fighting the good fight down at Meadowlark Media. I love sticking your chin out, going on your own way. So good luck with everything.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you so much. Amin El-Hassan. I love talking hoops with him, man. I really do.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.